Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us, and Happy New Year. It is a new year, and hopefully will be a better year than the crazy year we just lived through. My guest tonight is Eva Herr, returning to talk about her incredible book, Consciousness, Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Super Science of Quantum Physics, and we'll be talking to her in a minute. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. We've just gone through an incredible period of transition, but most people didn't notice. You know, we made fun of it to a certain extent and talked about what really was going on our Night Before the World Doesn't End show a couple of weeks ago. And there are planetary alignments. There were things besides the solstice that happened in this past 2 weeks that have not happened for 255 billion years, I think it is. Certainly million years. I forget what the number is. Since the dinosaurs were just starting to take hold on this planet, this alignment in the galaxy has not happened for an incredibly long time. And it's been predicted as a time of change and all kinds of other stuff. And then we had a full moon, which also was extremely powerful for reasons that I won't get into and don't necessarily completely understand, but I have friends that pay attention to that stuff. The only reason I'm mentioning this stuff, other than so you'll know that I still think about it, is that many of us have been sick for the last 2 weeks. I don't know about you, but I had what felt like a low-grade flu. I never really got the flu, but I couldn't focus. My body hurt. I was really tired. I couldn't get stuff done. It was just, it laid me out, but I didn't get seriously high fever and all the terrible stuff that you get with the flu. I had pretty low-level symptoms. For those of us that have gone through this enough times, we call it the vibrational flu. If the world around us is changing vibration and there are major events that are changing the whole way that everything is vibrating, especially if the vibration is going up as it always is, anything within you that is more dense than the new vibration is going to get shaken up and be forced out to be cleared. You know, some people call it bringing it to light, which sounds wonderful, except the experience sometimes is you get really tired and confused and feel sick and all kinds of odd things happen around you, and you go, what is going on? And that's one of the reasons that I like having Claudia McNeely on the show, because she tracks all that stuff, and she supports people that are going through what are called ascension symptoms. And we're going to have her on in a few weeks from now to catch up and find out all the things that are going on and that we should have known about for the last month. But I just want to give you a heads up and let you take a look at what's going on and let you look back at it and go, oh, well, maybe the reason I felt fill in the blank with whatever was going on in your life or your health was because of this strange stuff David always talks about. So the last thing that I saw Claudia post was that scientists have measured, observed, taken a picture of a spout of blue energy coming out of the center of the Milky Way galaxy. Never has been noticed before, never has been recorded before. They're not sure what it is. Claudia and I laughed, going, yeah, well, we knew something was going on, and that's how the physical world seems to be manifesting that. So we live in interesting times, and I just want, as usual, to suggest to you that there's way more going on than you may be noticing or thinking about. And that's a perfect end to the metaphysical musing and introduction to Eva Herr, who's talking, whose book talks about that edge between what could be going on and what scientists are finding out is going on and trying to understand. Eve, are you with us?
I'm here, but I kind of want to just finish listening to you talk about all that stuff. It's very interesting. You sound like you've been peering in our window at night.
There is all kinds of crazy stuff that's been going on. And for people who are energetically sensitive, you know, healers and indigo children and lots of folks, there's a tremendous effect on your health. And if there's nobody around saying, oh, by the way, this is a big transition period and it may affect your health, you walk around thinking that you're sick. You walk around thinking that there's some other virus or something going on. And there may be some of that, but not thinking that it could be much larger issues outside of your body and off this planet. So it's really fascinating stuff.
It really is.
But speaking of fascinating stuff, my dear, you just wrote an incredible book, which I've been waiting for a while, and got to speed read through. It's incredible. The book is Consciousness, Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Super Science of Quantum Mechanics. And you got to do something that people like me always wanted to do. You found the people who are the experts in the field, some of the best minds in this field of quantum physics and consciousness, and you got to sit down and pick their brains.
It was exciting, I have to say.
I'll bet.
It was like, whoa, they answered the phone I called. but I did. It had started back in the early 90s when I had my a very profound spiritual epiphany. And it changed my life literally, and I'm not kidding, overnight. It was like the blink of an eye. And so I wanted to, like Edgar Mitchell, you know, when he came back from the moon and he saw everything that he knew on something the size of a marble, something happened to him. And he had a spontaneous spiritual experience. And he too wanted to know what happened, because it takes you from being a very materialistic, narcissistic human being to a spiritual, conscious person saying, how can I be of service to humanity? Instead of, what can you do for me? What can I do for you? Over in the blink of an eye. And I wanted to know what happened, because I thought I was going crazy. And so I met this man very synchronistically. You'll have to read the Agape book to get that story. But I met this man who was a physicist for NASA and worked on the Apollo project. And we came up with these 20 questions that we thought that every person would want to know, and that every scientist should know what the other scientists had to say about these 20 questions. And that's how it started. The first one started, what is consciousness? And that's how it started. And what I, go ahead, I don't want to talk on, I just don't want to leave you in silence.
No, one of the things that amazes me is, like so many people, the way that this process unfolded for you, unbidden, you know, things changed, new ideas came in your mind, all kinds of information you were not aware of suddenly showed up. But you took it another step and came up with a plan to, I mean, it may have looked like writing the book, but you said, there are people that know what I want to know and I want to talk to them. And you talk to them, which is amazing all by itself, and then put together this incredible book.
It's my background in litigation. I'm not kidding.
That's exactly what it was. I get it.
You know, I'm not afraid. I was very involved in politics back in Alabama years ago. And when you're in litigation, I did big litigation, like multiple $1 million medical malpractice, excuse me, or product liability or personal injury. So I wasn't afraid to call people.
Right.
And I did. And I said, I would always say, I'm calling because I want to know the answer to these questions. And I would send them and I just want to know the truth. And they trusted me. Mm-hmm. And it started that way. And it's developed into great friendships that I never thought I would have. respect that I never thought I would have because I didn't, you know, I'm not a college graduate. I'm just a woman. And I think that many people say that this book is what they look at and they, oh, that's over my head. I can't read that. Well, it's not. It's a very, it takes very complex ideas, not ideas, because it's not ideas. I want to make that very clear. It's scientific facts. It takes very complex scientific facts and puts them in kindergarten language. The thing that makes it confusing to people is that every sentence is packed with information, so you can't speed read.
Right. Well, we live in a culture and an educational system of that culture which has the idea that science is hard and complicated because it's about math. And science is not about math. Math describes the phenomena that science understands and allows you to predict things, but it's like the map isn't the territory. The math is not the science. It's the underlying concepts that anyone can think about. You don't need the math for that. It's like saying you can't understand science if it's not written in French. You know, if it's not written in math, you can't understand it. No, the concepts are totally understandable and very important. And one of the things that we were talking about before, the basic information that everything is energy and that the physical world is somehow energy, not matter. Matter is an illusion. Or that it's matter sometimes and energy sometimes, depending on what you're looking for, is 100 years old. Einstein and a few of his cronies, were thinking about this 100 years ago, and most people will graduate high school not understanding it. That totally blows my mind.
Well, one thing that I learned from, I had a friend, his name is George Weissman, and he and Elizabeth Rauscher, who's one of the chapters in this book, are very good friends, and they are the subjects of a new book called How the Hippies Save Physics. Isn't that a great name? It's by a guy named Dave Kaiser at Harvard, and he's a Harvard physics historian. And so he wrote this book about how physics and consciousness came to meet today. So I had George read my book, and he taught me something. I've been guilty of saying there's no such thing as matter. Okay, so the confusing thing to people is that, and I've been guilty of this myself, I start out lectures saying, do you understand that there is no mass on the quantum level? Well, George Weissman, when he reviewed my book for me, said, Eva, that's probably a problem that you're going to have with conventional or classical scientists, because when you say there's no mass on the quantum level, they're just going to say, yes, there is. There's a chair here. There's a problem with linguistics. There is no matter on the quantum level. And I don't really know the difference between the two things, you know, mathematically. But that's what one thing that I learned, if that makes any sense.
Well, it's again, we're dealing with things that are very difficult to understand in layman's terms. So most people don't understand the difference between matter and mass. And is there a difference? And, you know, how do you, all of that. And then my favorite is space and time, or what physicists call space-time. And if you're in a realm that doesn't have mass, you're outside of space-time. And what does that mean?
Are you asking me, or are you just making? Are you just saying?
Well, it's partly a rhetorical question, and you know, partly because of the kind of work that I do and trying to understand ghost phenomena. One of my understandings is that because they no longer have mass, they no longer have matter. They're non-physical. They are no longer functioning in space-time the way we do when we have mass, when we have a physical body. They don't have the physical body, they don't have linear time, and they don't have space in the same way that we do. And remote healing, remote viewing, all of the healing and psychic phenomena in some way bump up against the same thing. When you change your consciousness so you're outside of the physical world, there is no space and time, and you can tune into anything, anywhere, any when, and get accurate information and even make changes in it. So it's, for me, a very visceral and personal as well as conceptual issue.
I think my own personal, when sitting here thinking about it while you're talking, is we aren't any different from a ghost, because if I were to drop dead right now, I wouldn't realize anything had happened except that I would see my body fall over on the floor. So I think it's and here's another linguistic issue. I think it's a vibrational or resonance issue. You know, it, like I said before we were talking, got on the air, are you in a room that vibrates at 56,573.68? Are you in that parallel universe? Or are you in one that vibrates at 269,762.69? You know, where are you on that? You know, who knows? But it's what makes matter or mass be in existence. You know, whether we're at a frequency where atoms vibrate at the right speed to resonate and be attracted to each other through attractor fields. But I think the important thing here is, in this whole topic that we're talking about, is what does it mean to life? What does it mean to life whether or not we have matter on the quantum level?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is because if there is no matter on the quantum level, and that's a proven scientific fact, it doesn't matter whether you believe it or not, it just is. But it means that we're all one.
Right.
And it means that there is nothing separating us from the chicken walking around scratching in my backyard right now, or the tree, or the starving Ethiopian children, or the road rage driver. We are that thing. And so when you really look at that, and when you really let it hit you, there's no matter on the quantum level. There's nothing separating us from anything, even from God. I like to use source because I don't like to step on any toes. What does that mean to us? It means that we are very powerful spiritual beings, and that we have the capability to change our lives and change this world for our children and change the quality of the lives that we're living in this moment. That's what I think.
Well, and that's the core of all the spiritual healing work and prayer and all of that, is the idea that everything is connected and everything is energy, and that if you focus on your connection to somebody, something, some event that appears to be outside of you, that you can influence it. And you can influence it for good if you send it love and positive intentions, and you can influence it negatively if you focus anger and hatred towards it, which in many traditions would be called a curse. You know, this stuff's been recorded throughout history, going back, I guess, 9,000 years into Egyptian and pre-Egyptian stuff. But science is just catching up, and that's the thrust of your book, is finding the experts in the field who are contemplating these kinds of questions and finding out, first of all, what the scientific facts are as they know them, and what their thinking is about this whole phenomenon.
Well, my book, you know, David, you know, it's really not directed to people like me and you, or the people, the mysticism, the people that are following or already studying mysticism. It's directed at the lawyers and the judges and the doctors and the businessmen out in the world that don't get that what they do is ruining our world. I mean, I told you, I was a paralegal and I practiced, you know, I was in a litigation practice. And what I watched these lawyers do so lacked integrity. And they're the ones that's supposed to be upholding these laws of integrity. And what they, my book is to them to, is try to prove to them, look, you're doing terrible things in this world. You right. are running lawsuits and suing people and ruining lives and causing people to commit suicide and causing people to lose their homes and their businesses. And really, you are that person, like it or not. You are that person. And so they don't believe me. I mean, you have no idea how many conversations I've had with some of them.
Oh, I bet.
And so this book is really directed at people like that. This is the science today, people. It's so new that it's not being taught in schools yet, but that doesn't make it any less valid.
Right.
You better perk up and sit up in your chair and read this brief because it's the facts. And that's why I did it.
And one of the things that we got to chat about before the show is when you talk to all these experts in their individual fields who have an entire career leading up to their present understanding, and they then read the book, which included information from other people in the field, they didn't even know these other people were doing this kind of work and didn't know what they had come up with.
That's true.
They're just, they aren't even talking to each other.
Most of these scientists, you know, they're so driven by what it is that, you know, God plant or source. I don't like to step on toes with religion, but source plants a seed in us when we come here as a little child. You know, from a little child, you have a passion about something. So you grow up and you do that passion if you're lucky and you don't get, you know, messed up by testosterone or estrogen when you go through puberty, you know, or go to college in your frat houses. But, you know, there's a seed there. And so these scientists, they're obviously very focused, brilliant, creative people, and they go to their room and they do their work and they live there. And they do their stuff, reproducing it over and over and over again so that they can write their paper to appear in the scientific journals. So that, but they don't look at, is somebody else doing what I'm doing so that we could collaborate and maybe have a quantum leap and change the world overnight? No. In fact, many of them didn't even want to know the other one that existed. Sometimes they were in the same state and had never even heard of each other. And so, you know, I thought, I've got to do something. I didn't even know that problem existed until I started talking to them, to some of them. And I'm not going to say who any names are, but but it is a problem. And when I told them, one of them said, oh, my God. And I thought, you know, because of this book, I now realize that, in fact, I'll say this name because he would say it. It's Phil Tiller. He said, first of all, he called me up and he said, I loved it. It's the best and most important book I've ever read. Then he called me back and said he hated it. And I said, why? And he said, because everybody doesn't say what I say. And I said, but Phil, don't you see that's the problem? You know, all of you aren't on the same page and you don't know it. And I said, we have to fix that because, well, you know, we can't go anywhere in science if we don't. And he said, let me think about it. So then he called me back a couple of weeks later, and he said, you know what? I really had a problem with it after I read the entire book because I started thinking, is the problem with Eva or is the problem with me? And I finally realized that the problem was with me, talking about himself, because everybody else didn't say what he said. And he said specifically, I've known this particular scientist for 30 years, and I never knew that this is what he thought consciousness was until this moment. And I said, well, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's just a miscommunication. And he said, I realize that now, and I realize that I'm not through with my work. Even though I'm retired, I realize there are things I've got to do now. And so hopefully, you know, it will bring these people together. It will help the world because we're conditioned by science since kindergarten. So the only way to convince the world of anything since 2 plus 2 is 4 is to prove it to them. So if we can get these scientists all on the same page, at least so they can have a conversation and have a meeting of the minds, as we say in litigation, you know, and talk about this world really is in trouble because we don't have enough natural resources for the next 10 years at the current consumption rate and the current population growth rate. And here's why, and we all agree on it.
Right.
And here's what we can do with mind and intention. And here's the proof that we have that mind and intention can really do this because we live in a virtual reality just like the games that our children play. Right. If that's true, and it is, this is what we can do. If we practice law with integrity or practice medicine with integrity. Well, I recently had a heart attack in September, a big one, and the doctor comes into my room the next, they put a stent in at that moment because I was like in a full-blown massive heart attack. Next day he comes in and he goes, okay, we put in a stent today, we want to put four more tomorrow, we want to do four bypasses next month, and we want to put you on the heart transplant list. And I went, no, thank you. I want that. And so a couple of weeks later, he said, there was a lot of things said, but he said, you know, nobody can do better medicine than me. And I was like, pharmaceuticals, but you don't know what I know. And I'm going to find out what I can do with real clean medicine and get well, not patched up and then die slow, sick death. So I had a scare a couple of weeks later, and I went back into the hospital, and this other doctor saw me, and she said, I'm not putting in any more bypasses in you, and I mean any more stents in you, and I'm not doing any bypasses. I'm certainly not going to put you on the heart transplant list. And I go, well, why would you say that? And because I'm in tears, you know, I think I'm dying.
Right.
And she said, you know, Eva, some people have to send their kids to college. You know, that's not that's not practicing medicine with integrity.
Right.
And so go ahead. I'm talking a lot. Sorry.
No, we're just coming up against the break, and I want to make sure everybody knows where to find you. Give people your website.
My website is EvaHerr, EvaHerr.com. I have Eva Herr on Facebook, but I would be most grateful if you would go to The Eva Herr Show and like that show, because I'm slowly gravitating my entire self over to The Eva Herr Show Facebook page.
Gotcha. Great. So, and we'll give that information again. When we come back from the break, I want to talk a bit about what each of the scientists said and the kinds of surprises that you had, because this is such exciting stuff. So we will be back right after these messages. This is David Franklin Farkas here on the Farkas Files on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere. Stay with us.
How do you wake up the entire African-American community to the hidden issue of mental health problems? Share your story.
4 years ago, I went through something that was very difficult for me. I was faced with a very big challenge at a young age. I didn't want to tell my parents. I really didn't want to tell anybody, and I didn't. I shut down. And that's not a burden that any young person should have to carry at all. Once I reached out to my sister, it got a little better. Once I told my mother, it got a little better. The more I talked about it, I felt it coming off. If you're strong enough to just open your mouth, that's all it takes.
This is Terry Williams, co-founder of the Stay Strong Foundation. It's time for us to wake up, stand up, and speak up. Together we can do this. Search online for stories that heal. We must share ourselves. Healing starts with us. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and the Stay Strong Foundation.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it?
Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the Lost Cat Magnet. and sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing, don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Later, much later, we heard something. We didn't breathe for listening. Then footsteps on the back porch, creeping, then more confident. After all, nobody was home. A hand closed on the knob on the screen door to the kitchen and found it latched. We heard a little sawing sound as a file began to slice through the screen wire. Grandma reached down for something in her sewing basket. Through the darkness, I managed to notice Grandma's rocker was rocking and she wasn't in it. She was standing over me. "Keep just behind me," she whispered. I followed her across the room into the kitchen. Now we were by the door, and I heard the scuffle of heavy feet in there on the crinkly linoleum. Grandma turned back to me. Under my nose, she struck a wooden match with her thumbnail. She touched the match to something in her other hand. It sizzled. Then she leaned down and rolled it into the invisible kitchen. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book A Long Way from Chicago by Richard Peck. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov. A message from the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back
with Eva Herr, whose new book, Consciousness, Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Super Science of Quantum Mechanics, I think is groundbreaking, and everybody who can read English, since it's not in other languages yet, should be reading this book because it will change your understanding of what's going on. So, Eva. Yeah,
well, Larry Dossey said, this book will force the rewriting of the neuroscience and the psychology textbooks. So I ask the questions that I hope, well, that I think that everyone else would want to ask if they had gotten to sit in my chair.
Well, one of the things, as I told you, I'm going to read the book cover to cover, but I didn't have time to do that. And as I flipped through, part of what was stunning is the kinds of questions that you asked and the way you drew these people out. So while you're saying anybody would have asked them, I don't think so. You really had a lot that you wanted to know, and you got information I don't think other people would have gotten. So tell me a little bit about perhaps the most surprising conversation and the most surprising piece of information that you got.
Well, I guess the biggest surprise was to find when I said, what is your definition of consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
And I interviewed 50 or 60 people. I got 50 or 60 different answers.
Right.
And to me, I mean, I'm just this little housewife, you know, raising my kids. And I felt all these people had their act together and knew what they were doing because they were very risky. I tried to pick the most respected minds in the world. And when I got all these different answers, I was like, oh my God, if they don't know, then what do the rest of us know? And so that was the biggest thing. You know, and the answers would literally range from anywhere from when I would say, what is your definition of consciousness? So we're all on the same page. Awareness. The ground of all being. The zero point field. God. Or as Bill Tiller said, it's not what consciousness is, but what it does. Aware that you are aware that you're aware. You know, things like that. And so that was surprising. I guess I didn't really, the rest of the stuff wasn't a surprise to me, but it would probably be a surprise to the average person that you can literally use your mind to change your reality. And when I say that, I'm going to use an example by Dr. Robert John, who was the dean of the engineering department at Princeton. Dr. John had a very simple pegboard put on his wall, and you can see it if you look up Princeton Pear, P-E-A-R, lab, and it's now closed, but because he's retired, I think he's dean emeritus now, but he put wooden pegs into this pegboard in the shape of a bell-shaped curve, and then he put a piece of plexiglass on the front of it. And he would get one person at a time to sit in front of this pegboard thing and meditate that all the balls, and he would have 10,000 ping pong balls that he would drop down into this mechanism. And you would expect, like on the lottery thing that they do, that when you drop them in, that they would just randomly fall half and half on each side. Well, that's not what happened. One person in an altered state, and that is the key, people. If you want to change your lives, you can't just think about it. You've got to feel it. You've got to visualize it and feel it. And it'll happen. If it's within your field of possibilities, because, you know, we're not driving the car, there is a higher power. But these people were causing more balls to fall to the left than to the right. It might have only been 5 extra balls at a time, but it was still 5 more balls than on the right, when otherwise it would have been 50%. And many of the scientists, even these scientists in my book, had a problem with that. They said, well, it's not reproducible by every scientist. They're not taking into the fact that we're spiritual beings and that you must be in an altered state, like Emoto's work. Many people discredit Emoto's work with water because they can't reproduce it. But they're not taking into the consideration that he's in an altered state. And when I say that, I mean like low theta or high delta. He's not. He's focused. He's cohesive. Right. You know, he's not thinking, you know, what am I going to do tomorrow? What am I going to do this afternoon? Right. What, you know, he's not. He's focused on what he's doing. And that's exactly what happens. So if you want to change your life, that is the biggest key I can give you right there, to visualize it and feel it. Because, you know, in Christianity, and I don't practice Christianity. I grew up that way, and then I converted to Judaism, and now I'm just spiritual. But in every one of them, they always say, when two or more gather, things happen. But they also always say that we are God, you know, or sons of God. And if there's no matter on the quantum level, and scientists have now proven that, that supports what religion has been teaching us for many years, thousands of years.
Right.
And we are that thing.
Right. And because the language used in all the spiritual traditions is different from the language of science, it was easy to discredit it as being mythology or superstition or any number of other things, except, of course, I always say, if they're telling the same story all over the world for 9,000 years, they can't all be wrong.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense just on the face of it. But it's different enough that science discounted it. And it also kept them out of trouble with the church, which, you know, kind of divvied things up. Don't step in our spiritual world, and we won't step in your scientific world and harass you.
Well, there's actually a very good book written by a Jewish MIT, actually an Orthodox Jew who lives in Israel and teaches at an Orthodox university, and almost lost his job because of this. But he's an MIT-educated physicist, and he wrote a fabulous book called The Science of God. And then I introduced him to Amit Goswami, and he wrote another one after that where they collaborated a little bit. I can't remember what the name of it was, but you'll find it. His name is Gerald Schroeder. And he literally compares physics on one page and the Talmud on another page. You know, he literally goes down the timeline of creativity. And it's right. Very amazing. Very, very amazing. And there's not much difference between science and religion in that from that perspective anyway,
right.
Except the language.
Right. And for those that aren't familiar with the Talmud, people think of Judaism as being about the Torah, the 5 books of the Hebrew Bible, but most of what is understood in Judaism is in commentary. So the mystical rabbis would try and interpret various things and were asked questions and give their interpretations. And then over 5,000 or 6,000 years, each generation of rabbis interpreted the interpretations of the prior rabbis. So you've got a mystical tradition in which people in an altered state of consciousness have been contemplating the same things for 5,000 years, and it's all recorded.
Exactly. We're no different from Moses. Moses was not special. You know, we have that same capability.
Right. Right. And we don't think of it that way because we think of these, the tzaddiks, the people who are mystics in whatever tradition, Judaism or any other tradition, as being very, very different from the common man. And that allows all of us who don't consider ourselves to be that special to just step aside and let these other guys do it, not contemplate the questions, not see whether indeed we could be in that altered state and get the information directly and come to an understanding for ourselves. And that's really what this time on the planet is about, is we're all being dragged into being mystics, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, I think there will be a clearer separation between those willing to really know who they are and those really stuck to the materialistic world. I think that we will start seeing that part, like, you know, the Dead Sea parted. I think that we will start seeing a more substantial view of that in physical reality. I've already started seeing it in many ways just in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. There's all you have to do is watch the TV news lately to watch things change fairly dramatically, sometimes in really annoying ways, but
well, there's good things, too, that's happened in the past 2 weeks. Like Urban Laszlo. Did I tell you this before when we were talking on the phone?
No.
I was talking to Urban Laszlo on Saturday, and he said the day after the Connecticut shootings, there was, you know, he lives in Italy, and there was some kind of sports event going on near where he lived. And I didn't get whether it was a spontaneous thing they decided to do or whether it was planned, but they had some kind of festival outside the sports arena where people were meditating and doing things that they do at mystic festivals. You know, mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about. I'm sure your listeners know. So they were doing this thing, and so this man came up to him and said, "Urban, Urban was in the Club of Rome," which dates back a long time, the origin of it. Then he started the Club of Budapest, which is something where he promotes humanitarianism and works with the United Nations and with leaders of countries to try to get them on board with changing the world before it's too late. And this man said to him, "I want you to start an extension of the Club of Budapest in the Americas, meaning Canada, North and South America, and I will fund it. The only key is that you got to have women running it." And so this is, he said, even this information is only 10 days old, so I don't know, you know, what all is going to happen yet. But so, you know, that happened. I interviewed him, not this past Saturday, but the one before. So it's all happening within this time. You know, this came out of nowhere that suddenly, right, he said, only key is that it's got to be run by women.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that mysticism has been saying, that when the world is changing, it will be the women who do that, the feminine. And that came out of nowhere. So people expect something to start happening with this organization for women. And I hope to hear from any woman who wants to be involved. So please like me on the Eva Herr Show on Facebook so I can keep you informed about this thing, because I think it's going to turn out to be something really great, I hope.
Very interesting and exciting stuff going on all over the place. So just getting back to some of the things that you discussed with the people in the book. One of the things that came up was there is scientific proof that the mind can manipulate physical reality. And you were talking about the randomness experiment with the ping pong balls. And I know about some of the others, but why don't you tell us about some of the other things that have been experimentally proven?
Well, they had these Princeton planted, I think it was Princeton, or it may have been the Global Coherence Project with Roger Nelson and Dean Ray, and I can't remember, but they planted random event generators all over the world. And if you go to the, I think it's the Global Coherence Project, but if you Google Roger Nelson and consciousness, you'll find it. And you can actually see an active profile of these random event generators going off. And whenever they go off, within 3 days before or after, some event will happen in that part of the world. And they don't, it makes a little noise like, bing. Have you ever been to this site, David?
No, but I know about the experiments, yeah.
It's an amazing site. But it'll go bing, or if it's a big cohesion of energy, it'll go bong, like that. And when it does, something will happen, and they don't know what will happen. They just know that something will happen.
Right.
So one of the experiments that they did with these random event generators, and they're actually in computers, and they print out ones and zeros. But they also have a lamp that you can go to Syleron, P-S-Y-E-L-E-R-O-N, and it's called a mind lamp, and it's got a small random event generator planted down in the bottom of it, and you can use it in your home. And it rotates through the electromagnetic spectrum. It's beautiful to look at. So you know that as long as it's rotating through the colors of the rainbow, that you're not cohesive. You're not really focused. When it stops and gets on one color, you'll know that your energy is cohesive, and they don't really know how it does this. Some people, like Bill Tiller, suspect that it's through something called magnetic monopoles. But when it stops on one color, then you'll know that that's the time for you to try to be in that creative space to change your life. Mm. Now back to the events. So they did an experiment. I think that it was either in Pennsylvania or in Michigan, I can't remember. One year there was a bowl series, you know, like football, one of those bowl series.
Mm-hmm.
And every year, whenever they have one of those series, crime would go up 25%. So they did a meditation, and it doesn't take a lot of people to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The meditation just has to be acutely focused, you know, as few words as possible. And if we have time, I'll explain this in a minute. But they did this meditation, and for the first time, crime went down 25%.
Right.
That's a big deal. When the tsunami happened not too long ago, the random event generator went off 3 days before, and they knew that it went off. They knew that it became non-random, or more random, whatever it is, I can't remember. But they just didn't know what was going to happen. So
right.
That's where they hope that science will go, that they can more accurately predict exactly where something will happen and what that thing will be. But we're far from that at this moment.
Right. The ones I heard about was Princess Diana dying.
Every major event. Every single major event.
The one that was fascinating to me was everybody knew that the O.J. Simpson verdict was going to happen. So it was an event that was predictable in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was one of the situations in which they knew there would be a tremendous amount of focus, and it was unknown what the outcome was going to be. And they could watch the activity of the random generators respond to this future event that was predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that always fascinates me is that it's predictive. So an event that seems to be in the future and unknown and unknowable on the level of consciousness that's affecting these random numbers is already known several days in advance.
Yes. And another thing, you know, Bill Tiller did the experiments with the water in the fruit fly larvae. Are you familiar with either of those?
No, not Tiller's.
We can talk about that. It's on his website. They're white papers. It's tiller.org, if I'm not mistaken. Very simple, Tiller, T-I-L-L-E-R.org. And what he did was he built an intention carrier. And it's just a little machine about this, you know, a little tiny black box. And he and his wife, and Norm Shealy and his wife, meditated. They get in an altered state. And again, I can't stress it enough, if you're trying to change your life, that is the critical key, getting in an altered state.
Yep.
That mind lamp is a very good tool to know when you were there. But anyway, so they focused, and they focused on this box, that when they would turn this box on, that it would cause the water to increase the pH by 1 point. So they got this company to donate a bunch of water, and they shipped it across the other side of the country and across to the other side of the world. And then they would ship these little boxes there. And as soon as the scientists on the other side of the world or country would plug it in, within 3 days, the water would increase its pH by 1 point.
That's amazing.
That's a big deal, because if your pH changes by 1 point, you die. You know?
Well, yep. Well, Eva, we're going to have a continuing series of conversations here, because we always run out of time.
We do, don't we?
So let's plan that. Let's talk about maybe each of the chapters in the book and what it means. My guest tonight is Eva Herr, whose new book is Consciousness, Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Super Science of Quantum Mechanics. Her website is evaherr.com, evaherr.com. And thanks so much for being on. I love having these conversations with you, and this book is incredible. Everybody go out and get the book right now, because it will change your understanding of everything that's going on in the world.
Thank you, David. And please, I ask you if you would go to Amazon and write me a review.
Oh, absolutely.
It would help.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. And please be sure and go to the Eva Herr Show and like it, so you can keep up with what I'm doing.
Yep. So go to Facebook and like the Eva Herr Show page, so that she can have a conversation with you there.
And I'd love to hear you by email on Facebook. Keep in touch. And happy holidays and a happy new year to everyone.
Great. Thanks so much, Eva.
Thank you, David. Bye.
If you would like to hear more about my work, you can find that at househealing.com. And cleverly hiding on the contact tab is every conceivable way to get in touch with me, including a link to make a telephone appointment. We can have a 20-minute complimentary meeting and talk about what's going on for you and my work, and whether my work will be helpful to you. And obviously, my work is right in this realm that Eva is talking about, which is why I find the science of all this so exciting. What most people don't realize is that this seemingly strange, mystical, mumbo-jumbo stuff really is explainable with hard science. It's just that the information is not widely distributed yet, which is why Eva's book is so exciting. So next week, we're going to have an interesting little trade. We're going to have a mystery guest who is another one of the Empower Radio hosts. So tune in and we'll have some fun. Until then, have a wonderful week. Stay warm, because it's really cold where I am. And much love to everybody. Thank you, one and all, for being here. And this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a wonderful week.